This show is brought to you by Commercial Creative Systems, supporting the color-critical, deadline-driven creative services sector. Modern communications agencies depend on reliable, quality print solutions because they know the costs that come with getting it wrong. From quick fix to full studio workflow calibration, Creative Systems has a solution for you. Creative Systems' market-leading experience as the creative industry's most dynamic and knowledgeable systems integration specialist delivers best-in-class copying and printing systems, MPS, proofing, and cross-media applications. And all this quality comes with the highest level of service delivered by knowledgeable and experienced personnel. And if your company is mindful of its carbon footprint and wants to reduce the environmental impact of its decisions, then Creative Systems has your back. Being part of the commercial group means that social value and sustainability are at the heart of its business, and commercial is the recipient of the Queen's Award for Enterprise Sustainable Development category. So if you need a quality service backed by years of experience working with the UK's most agile marketing and comms agencies, then check out their website at creativesystems.co.uk or call them on 0208 758 7750.
The number one transformation in your own business will come around when you start valuing yourself and start valuing the work that you do.
Phil Lewis, The Paradigm Breaker. It's not the catchiest of titles, but it's very accurate. I first met Phil about 20 years ago when he worked for an advertising agency in Manchester. I looked after the new business campaigns, and Phil drove them from within the agency. But you'd almost think he was the new business manager because his interpretation of data made my weekly reports look like the skin on a custard, something you need to suffer through in order to locate the richness underneath. After a successful year or so, we both went our separate ways, and I worked my way up in the new business industry, while Phil took strategic charge at various big league ad agencies, until he finally said, enough is enough, and struck out on his own. Through it all, his mindset's never changed, and that's how you can tell the commitment of the man. He reprograms marketing and leadership teams to think in new and innovative ways at existing and new products and strategies. He's regularly featured in Forbes magazine, and it's only a matter of time before the book comes out. And when it does, Phil, I want you to come back and feed us a few tidbits. In the meantime, let's cut straight to the interview with Phil, which we did at the very start of the blossoming of the coronavirus outbreak. So excuse us if we're not taking it all too seriously. Okay, well, welcome, Phil Lewis, CEO and top man at Corporate Punk. Thanks for taking time out of the day. I know you're busy, so we'll try and get through this with as few mistakes as possible. Small programming note before we start. We do have details of an earlier chat that I had with Phil on our fabulous new website, which you can find at www.thefuelpodcast.com. And you'll not only see background to Fuel, the Advertist and the team, but also a nice piece of info on Phil and Corporate Punk. But if you don't want to go over to the website just yet, maybe Phil can bring us up to speed with a little intro to Corporate Punk, how it came into being, and what is the main motivation behind the company. So welcome, Phil.
Hello, Keith. I was just thinking as you welcome intro to the me fuel. There. I was just thinking as you intro me there, just how long you and I have known each other, which is a long time. We're both considerably older now than we were then, aren't we? But to answer your question,
long
I think
in the tooth, yeah.
To answer your question, I mean, Corporate Punk came about because, in really simple terms, I'd spent, well, the better part of a decade and a half working in both agency businesses and in consulting businesses, and two things struck me. So the first thing was that I was working with all these people with loads of talent, loads of good ideas, loads of energy and passion and commitment, and in many cases, a lot of experience as well. And very rarely did all of that seem to come together in a way where the whole was greater than the sum of its parts. So a lot of the time, you know, you'd be seeing all of this sort of great talent, and actually a business not able to mobilize around it in any sort of, you know, in any sort of sensible way. Keith.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, I mean, why do you think businesses fail to sort of mobilize behind sort of new thinking and stuff? Is it, is,
Is it because they're constrained by the past, or just they're afraid to think forward, or what?
Well, it's a really interesting point, because I think the thing that turned corporate punk from being a curiosity about that, curiosity about, well, I often say, why is it some people bring the creative best out of, some businesses bring the creative best out of their people and others bring out the worst? And my other formulation of the question is, why is it smart people do dumb things? actually, it turned out to be a deceptively simple question, that when you start to examine why it is that businesses are unable a lot of the time to mobilize around their talent, their experience, their energy, their ideas, it's to do with the way that the human mind works. It's to do with the structures that we build for ourselves. It's to do with the fact that we don't think systemically. So a lot of fixes for the problems that we create as we grow businesses tend to solve one immediate problem but create longer problems and more complex problems. It's to do with how we manage organizational politics. It's to do with the behavior of leaders, particularly, you know, leaders as they grow. And let's not forget, all leaders are flawed human beings as well. So actually, the reasoning behind that is quite a complex sort of quite a complex set of considerations. And then, just to finish my story, you know, you start to look at consultancies and agencies, you know, businesses that are supposed to be there to solve the problems of their clients, or at least help their clients do so. And the fact is, a lot of the time they fail to do that, partly because their own structures, their own systems and processes, their own politics stand in the way of clients being able to take full advantage of the skills that sort of third party support offers. And also sometimes because they're just not incentivized to do so. So corporate punk is, you know, is fundamentally really about how do we help clients get out of their own way? How do we help the businesses that we work with get out of their own way so that, you know, they can do what it takes to survive and thrive? And how do they overcome their own structural constraints, their own process constraints, their own leadership constraints, their own political constraints? How do we help them get over all of that so that actually they're able to unleash that talent and unleash that energy, and in so doing, achieve whatever objectives they've set out for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because pretty much every agency I've ever worked in has always been a question of, you know, sort of when new talent tends to come in, it does tend to get stifled because of the normal way that an agency works. And especially, I would say that's especially relevant now, given the sort of digital ecosystem that we've all had to adapt to. Is that, you know, this kind of new thinking gets very kind of like shoehorned into the traditional way of doing things. And I think that kind of, you know, that can dampen down people's enthusiasm. And I think there's a lot of sort of new media experts that came through that could have gone on to much greater things had they been allowed to kind of grow and thrive in their environment, do you think?
I think that's right. I mean, my sort of sense of agency life in particular, and again, you come back to some basics. I mean, human beings are
you were always sort of a paradigm breaker anyway.
Well, I suppose that was, it's kind of you to say so. I think that I just have limited truck for understanding why things should be the way that they are. You know what I mean? I actually just fundamentally want to look at things and go, well, what isn't working about that and why? And the reason I think human beings are very simple, Keith, actually. In the end, we are driven to go towards things that are pleasant, and we are driven to get away from things that are unpleasant. So when you look at new talent joining a business, for example, leadership may find that unpleasant. And the reason that leadership will find that unpleasant a lot of the time is because actually it poses an innate threat to you know, your own knowledge and your own status. So survival is always a really interesting thing. So survival threats show themselves in two ways in organizations. The first way is actual survival. Will I still have a job? Will I still have a role if this set of circumstances transpires? The second thing is egoic survival, which is to say, is my status or position amongst the tribe threatened by this new development? Wherever something is happening in a business where either actual survival or egoic survival is threatened, and your example of bringing on board new talent who understand maybe channels and platforms that some of the existing and sometimes more more senior people in a business don't understand. Wherever you see those sorts of threats happening, you would absolutely guarantee that businesses will be full of people behaving quite weirdly. That's the long and the short of it. People who feel threatened, people who feel as though their survival is being threatened, will behave quite oddly. And, you know, they'll behave to protect themselves. And that's actually one of the reasons why you start to see agencies who are going, we need to take advantage of these latest trends. We bring in some talent to be able to do that. They kill that talent, and then they actually kill their own agency's growth potential as a result of doing that. It's all down to survival threats, or a lot of it's down to survival threats.
And it kind of feeds itself, doesn't it? Because obviously, you know, you dampen down the threat, or you take the threat away, which increases the paranoia, which then, you know, drives you to do other things. And eventually it's just a vicious cycle you find yourself in the whole time.
Well, energetically, what you actually fear is the thing that you're attracting towards yourself. So without wanting to sound too woo-woo on this, if what you're actually worrying about, I believe this to be genuinely true. If what you're worrying about is that your business is innately threatened by the bringing on board of new talent or by some degree of change in circumstances. If you are worrying that your business is threatened, what you're actually doing, that fear is creating a situation where your business is unlikely to be able to react and respond to what's going on in the right ways, which actually only justifies that fear in the first place. So if you look at the coronavirus stuff that's happening at the moment, there are fundamentally two ways you can respond. You can lean out of it and go, we're in real trouble here. We've got a real sense of, you know, we've got loads of problems. None of our clients are spending. It's going to be a horrendous year. And then what happens is you start to batten down the hatches, you start to not invest in things, you start to spend all your time worrying rather than creating, you know, and actually what you're bringing about is a situation in which you're going to be creating a more sort of poverty-infused future. Whereas if you lean into it and go, okay, this is not an ideal situation, but energetically I want to understand not only how my business can survive this, but also thrive this. What you're actually priming in your mind and in your team's mind is this idea of, well, okay, with every challenge, there is an opportunity. Everywhere someone's losing money, Keith, someone else is making money. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a decision as to which side of that conundrum which side of that coin you want to be on.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was, you know, I've been having several conversations, obviously, given the sort of the coronavirus issue coming through, and that, you know, it's really just a question of sort of how you view this, which prism you shoot this through, because, you know, it's very easy to say, okay, well, everything's stopped, therefore we're going to stop, or, you know, as one of the agencies I spoke to earlier today was that they basically retooling to try and create more work in the kind of online, the remote working environment, and looking at things differently, because their client, it's not like everybody stopped. This is the thing. So I'm kind of quite keen to see how agencies are sort of gearing themselves up now to cope with change, because that's surely what they were set out to do in the first place.
Well, I agree. I mean, so in 2008, so here's a story for you. In 2008, when the credit crunch was happening. Do you remember the credit crunch? Well, that was all going on. And and anyway, there's a CEO who I've long admired, and his organization is basically suppliers to the public sector. And all of the public sector suppliers in his corner of the market were absolutely going to the wall. And, you know, because all public sector spend had basically been stopped. And and I rang him, and I said, I was ranging really concerned. So I've always sort of why I should be concerned about him, I suppose. But he's a mate, and he's somebody who's done very, very well for himself. He was never going to be on his uppers, but nevertheless, I was a bit concerned. And I rang him, and I went, "How are you doing? You know, how's it all going?" And he went, "Oh, business has never been better." And I said, "Why is that?" I like genuinely confused. I went, "Why is that?" And he went, "Well, the thing is, Phil," he went, "I have decided that I'm just not participating in this recession." And honestly, it's one of the top three things I've ever heard in business, that I am just not participating in this recession. You know, it was a sort of moment of great inspiration for me from a kind of mindset standpoint, which was like, what he'd done was he basically went, it is not an option that the business is going backwards. We're going to just, we're just going to keep moving it. We're going to make sure we're here. We're going to make sure we survive and thrive. And that infused all of his decision making. And actually, you know, Q, even now, what, we're in 2020, so 12 years later, his business remains stunningly successful and continues to prosper when so many of the competitors have gone to the wall and continually gone to the wall over the last 12 years. And I think it comes partly from that mindset and then partly from, you know, the quality of opportunity and the decision making and everything else that, that are infused by it. I mean, look, it's not the only thing. I mean, you've got to still got to have a, you know, a very smart growth strategy. You've still got to be able to think tactically. You've still got to be able to get your teams working together in the right ways. And that's where me and my sure. team are here to help. But, you know, we can and are actually helping people to restructure and rethink what they do, partly as a result of the coronavirus and just partly because I think it's the nature of business these days about how do you cope with constant change. But actually, a lot of the time, it does start with the mindset thing and then the practicalities kind of flow from there.
Well, I was going to say you obviously learned from it because when I emailed you at the end of the week just to make sure you were still okay for the podcast, when you sent me the email back, it was like you were like, "What the hell's going on? It's like a world gone mad." And it kind of reminded me of like that painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware or like Nelson on the bridge of victory, you know, the HMS Victory. You were like, "I don't understand why everybody's panicking. We're just going to keep on going." You know, you were just plowing on. And I think that was it's a great mindset to have, given, you know, when everybody else around you is losing their head, you know, is to damn the torpedoes and just, you know, and keep moving forward, but just change the because there's a military battle tactic about the fact that, you know, you can't predict the outcome of any battle, but you go in with a plan and then you're just prepared to change that plan in the heat of the battle if you need to. And I think that, you know, a lot of agencies can, you know, can learn from that kind of that kind of approach.
I think there's three things. One is we're supposed to be in the creative industries, and, you know, what is creativity apart from being able to solve a difficult problem in an original way? That is exactly, in my mind, what creativity is. And if you think about it in a business context, for many of us, depending on which sector you're in, of course, the coronavirus represents a difficult challenge that needs solving in an original way. So that's the first thing. The second thing I think is that, you know, if we are... So Nassim Taleb, who wrote The Black Swan, also wrote a really interesting book called Skin in the Game last year. And actually going back a year or two before that, wrote another book called Anti-Fragile. And he makes the point that, you know, that many people who are in jobs consider themselves to be in a robust place, but actually are in quite a fragile place because what they haven't got is the ability to turn and adapt depending on what happens in a market. You know, you've been right. in the same job for 15 years and you get made redundant, you suddenly don't know what to do about that. And I think many of us who run creative businesses, that entrepreneurial thing is we can actually be what he calls anti-fragile. So we can come back stronger from the challenges we face. We actually end up with better businesses as a result of having to face into challenges. And I think there's something about creativity, and I think there's something about anti-fragility in the context of entrepreneurialism. And then I think also there is something about the concept of impermanence in all of this too, which is to say, okay, things are a bit mad at the moment. And, you know, I mean, I'm gobsmacked as to what's been going on in our local supermarket over the last few days, but that will settle down. You know, we're talking about the credit crunch. We haven't used that terminology in 10 years. Okay, now the social and sociopolitical impacts of the credit crunch are very, very, are still being felt, I think, turn this into a politics lecture. And some of the economic impacts around rich versus poor, I think, are definitely being felt. I think that will be true of what's going on here as well. But actually, the world can and will move on. And, you know, the economies do not stop. It will not go into freefall. We're not going to be looking at wholesale collapse of, you know, of the entire infrastructure of society. We're just going to be looking at a bumpy few weeks. And I think actually, if you take that view as well, you sort of condition yourself to be able to see through it. So for me, it's all about you're just able to flow where you kind of need it as an entrepreneur. And then, as I say, your quality of strategic decision making and everything else, you can either do that yourself or get help in, but it'll be made innately better by that mindset.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, look, talking of finances and stuff, we need to take a quick commercial break. So if you want to just hold on there for a second and we'll get right back to you. Hold on.
Great.
This show is made possible by the participation of Commercial Creative Systems, the first choice for London's creative community. Those that know the world of imaging are raving about the Canon ImagePress C710. Rather than viewing a copier as something to run prints from, Creative Systems sees it as a way to make you stand out from the crowd. This isn't only the highest quality professional laser device available, but it also has some fantastic capabilities, such as consistently accurate colour, print on and automatically duplex up to 350 GSM card, media flexibility, whether that's snakeskin, pearl effect or 1.3 metre banners, this device really does it all. And, oh no, if disaster strikes during a deadline-driven pitch, your machine will be fully calibrated, repaired and up and running within 2 hours, 24/7, courtesy of your dedicated Creative Systems engineer.
And we're back. So welcome back to the Fuel Podcast. I'm talking to Phil Lewis, CEO and inspirational leader of Corporate Punk. Now, Phil, one of the things you were talking about was how agencies can sort of make the most of new normal and during this kind of contagion age. I wanted to ask you about a discussion you started on LinkedIn about this issue of imposter delusion, which I think kind of feeds into what we were talking about with the coronavirus, in that when there's instability with agencies, I mean, should agencies ever agree to do unpaid creative work? I mean, I've read through your articles on this about the imposter delusion, and it reminded me of something my grandmother used to say about giving everything away on the first date. You know, is that could you explain what you mean by imposter delusion, first of all?
So this, if you wind back, I think goes right to how we are brought up in school, a lot of us, which is to say that, you know, you're brought up in school not to be a creative thinker. You're okay. Not brought up in school to be a somebody who exists outside the box. You're brought up in school to be a good, obedient professional who good exam passing machine who goes on in time to be a nice, obedient professional. Right. So basically what you then end up with is you end up with a kind of society in which creativity is not taught and it is not valued a lot of the time outside of very specific artistic pursuits. And bear in mind, those artistic pursuits are basically held to be a lottery. If you're talented and you're in the right place, right time, you'll get ahead. And if you're not, you won't. So it's not really taught valued in the same way that, say, law is or accounting is or, you know, becoming a doctor is or whatever. So the right. creative industries actually they do not have the same sort of social prestige around them, certainly not in the business world that a lot of other industries have, just in terms of the kind of discourse that happens in society. And then if you bring that together with the fact that most people who end up running creative businesses have never really had proper support in terms of developing leadership, in terms of thinking right. through business management, all the rest of it, what you end up with is a bunch of people running creative businesses who fundamentally feel inferior to others, right? So they fundamentally yeah. feel like they shouldn't actually be doing what they do, and that somebody's going to walk in one day and they're going to be found out. So they're then walking into a big FMCG or a big financial services player or a big retailer or whatever, and they're sitting there trembling inside, basically, because they feel as though the marketing director, the CEO, whoever it is they're having to interact with, is going to say one thing and the entire house of cards on which their business is built is going to fall over, right?
Right.
And you see this happening time and time again. Now, it shows up then in some amazingly unhealthy ways. So, for example, and you may not feel like that consciously a lot of the time. You're thinking, no, I'm a proven creative and whatever. But then at the same time, what you're actually doing is you're giving away your creative work for free, or you're charging for the execution, not the quality of the idea, or you're in a right. race to the bottom price-wise from a procurement standpoint, or you're agreeing to go through seven rounds of pitching in the vague hope that you'll actually get the yes in the end. or you're going to agree to punitive contractual terms because you think that's the only thing that you can broker. All of that basically says, I am not grounded in the value that I bring. Now, if you bring that back to coronavirus, what you've actually got in the world of coronavirus is a situation in which you go, there is something existential potentially going on around a business. So my agency business is being threatened by the fact that maybe clients have pulled the drawbridge up from a spend point of view, or maybe what they wanted to buy, 6 months ago is not what they want to buy now, or so on. And as a result of that, so because I'm feeling inferior, what I'm actually doing is I'm now cowering away rather than actually addressing that problem head on. Or I'm actually agreeing to a client turning around saying, yeah, I'm going to pull or spend, and not enforcing the contractual terms that I agreed with that client because I'm so worried that I'm going to be fired if I do that. So imposter delusion basically says you have a huge amount of value to add as a creative person. You have one of the most valuable skill sets in the world, which is the ability to think laterally about, and solve difficult problems in original ways. And actually, the way that you've been brought up and the way that you've been schooled in your industry is getting you to, and your own mindset is getting you to devalue that. Number one transformation in your own business will come around when you start valuing yourself and start valuing the work that you do. Bit of a rant, Keith, sorry, but that was basically what it's kind of all talking to.
Well, it's an interesting thing, and it comes up quite regularly on LinkedIn, and I think that it's kind of we've all been there in the situation. I think it doesn't matter whether you're an agency or whether you're just selling, apart from now if you're selling toilet rolls, the point is that I think that there's a kind of an internal belief system that people need to tap into quite often that they don't, and that does reflect in the way that you deal with people.
Okay, but So yes, I kind of agree, but if you're an accountant or a lawyer, right, you do not have this kind of category curse of feeling like an imposter. So when somebody rings you for advice as a lawyer, you're going, right, I'm billing in 6 minute increments, on goes the clock, well, I'll talk for as long as you want and you're going to get a bill proportionate for that time. You ring somebody in the creative industries, especially in an agency or whatever, to have a conversation about your problem, and you can almost guarantee, certainly about 98% of occasions, no one's sitting there thinking, well, people at the agencies aren't coming off that call going, okay, we just need to raise an invoice then for that hour.
Get you, right, yes.
Do you see what I mean? Yeah. They're not thinking that. What they're thinking is, well, it was nice to do that to keep the client happy. And sometimes that's fine. But what happens so often is it becomes business damaging. Because actually what happens is you're giving away all your value in a way an accountant or a lawyer wouldn't. You're giving away all your value without raising any invoice or even having a discussion with the client about how that's paid for. And I think that's bullshit. And I think it devalues the talent of a lot of people. It's like money talks, bullshit walks, right? If your advice is good, it's worth paying for.
That's very true. Very true. And, I mean, in that sort of in the article that I was citing there, I mean, you talk quite profoundly about the need to establish very clear boundaries between the client and the agency. And you make a great point that agencies get the clients that they deserve. And I think that kind of feeds into it in that, if you set out the relationship in terms of the fact that the client knows that they can push you into a corner, then that's how that relationship is going to keep on going.
So I think that's right. And I think you condition an agency relationship in the opening hours of the relationship. Certainly in my consulting practice, I think the way that we actually set things up with clients, the way that we contract with clients, what I mean by contracting is really just the way that we talk about the rules of the road for the relationship, not so much what's written in a legal contract, but how we actually talk to clients about the rules of the road. If we do that in the right way, actually we set ourselves up for success. So I have, outside of Corporate Punk, I have an agency mentoring practice. So I have, I actually look after a small number of independent agencies and help them to grow, which I do to keep my hand in the creative industries, and also because sometimes with slightly smaller businesses, actually bringing in a sort of team of consultants like we do at Corporate Punk isn't the right approach. So I like doing this kind of smaller work. And I think a lot of the time, you know, they're always going, we have a problem with sales, they'll say, or they'll sit there and they go, we have a problem with our proposition. And as soon as the phrase agency proposition comes up, I mean, I would say to you, number one thing that points to is you haven't got a problem with your agency proposition. What happens a lot of the time is that it doesn't really matter whether you say you're helping people to keep brand promises or whether you say you're helping people, your brand to shine like a beacon in the night. None of that matters, really. What matters actually is usually under that, which is, what's the thing that you're really good at that's really hard to buy? Right. And that's where the work needs to happen. What's the thing you're actually really genuinely good at that you want to buy? And how does that intersect with what you care about, where the market opportunity is? But then beyond that, also, how do we get you grounded in your own value? Because it's things like the hungry don't get fed, Keith. So actually, as soon as you start, clients can smell desperation. So if you want to have a really broad procurement conversation, walk into a procurement conversation where they know you need the business. Do you know what I mean? And so forget the agency proposition work. It's like, let's get in at a deeper level in terms of what is it you're actually good at? Where, how does that intersect with what you care about and what the value of the market is? And then also aligned to that, how do we get you grounded in that? Because people who know what they're good at, they don't in that sense start feel the need to sell what they do. What they do is they become like lighthouses for that, and they attract people to them, and then they're in a much, much stronger negotiating position. It's all about power, this. It's all about where the power in negotiation lies and all that sort of stuff. But it comes down to, if you feel like an imposter, really what happens, the way it will show up in most client relationships, is just that you're just a team of people hanging around in the hope your next invoice gets paid. And that is not the basis for a good working relationship with anybody, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, it's amazing to hear you talk about this, because I sort of sit here and I think, well, you know, how do you even begin to unlock that? You know, I mean, there's such a degree of psychology in everything that you do that, you know, the actual creative element from it, you know, is just one part of the puzzle. Because I think, you know, you having the ability to sit people down and to get them to open up to you in that kind of way, I think that's the sort of skill. I mean, you know, does it take a particular mindset? I mean, in what state are people when they come to you? I mean, how bad are they? I mean, cases or what?
No, not at all. I mean, actually, usually the people that we work with are, you know, intelligent, accomplished, creative, small C leaders. And this goes to Corporate Punk and it goes to mentoring work, but intelligent, experienced, energetic, creative, accomplished leaders. And yet they're just struggling to know how to bring the best out of their teams, how to make sure that they're commanding the value for what they're doing in the marketplace, how to navigate through tricky client relationships, whatever that looks like. We're not working with basket cases. We're working with people who usually are good or great and just looking for opportunities to be better. And then the triggers within that, though, can be, you know, growth is tough, right? So growth is going to bring times when suddenly your team stops feeling like it's working together in ways that are functional, or suddenly actually a big client relationship that you've always relied on looks really wobbly, or suddenly a kind of new technology emerges and it starts to threaten you, or suddenly actually, you know, you've taken investment and your investors are expecting different things from you. Or actually what happens all the time, particularly in the mentoring practice, is that agency owners are going, hang on a second, I've been running this business for how many years, but I feel like it's running me. So they have these moments where they just go, I need to get back to actually really assertively running my business and actually driving towards a very specific intention. So the trigger points can be a little bit different, but usually it comes down to, there is something that I really want out of this business that I am somehow unable to get. But that doesn't mean that these are basket cases at all. It just means that they need a bit of help in understanding how to drive more value out of their people and how to act as leaders in ways that command that value as well. And that's what it is. And then in terms of how you get them to open up and stuff, I mean, I would say to you, if you go into the, you know, the agency side of my work particularly, you would be very, very surprised by you may not be, but you'd be very surprised by the pace of change that can be achieved with just a really focused conversation one-to-one with a CEO or an MD or with a small group of people who are leading that business. Because, right. you know, the reason that I focus my mentoring work specifically on creative businesses is because I've actually been there and done it myself. You know, yourself, I've owned a couple of, you know, agency yep. businesses in the past. I've made a lot of mistakes in doing that and I have a lot of scars. And so I understand that game very well because I was in it for 15 years. And I would say in corporate punk, just to broaden it out a little bit in terms of the, you know, in terms of broader organizational development work, what you tend to realize actually is that in the end, you know, Jay-Z said there was only about 10 rap songs. And I think the same thing about problems in organizations in the end. When you really look, there's a lot of complexity goes on, but at some level it's down to there's a communication issue with your people, or there is something structural yeah. going on, or there is something in the processes mm. that are broken, or actually you're not connected to your own value as a leader or whatever. And actually mm. when you really boil it down, there's actually only a very small number of things that actually need to be worked on. That's been my experience anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of like a marriage, you know, there's really only sort of three things that are in jeopardy or that really do have a problem: money, the actual relationship, or where the remote control is, you know.
Yes, but I think also people misdiagnose, right? So sometimes businesses go, we've got a sales problem, and actually yes. what they do is they've got a problem which is being properly grounded in their own value, or they think that they've got a you know, a proposition problem, and actually it's to do with the integrity with which they're managing their client relationships. And you know, there's a lot of that kind of happens as well. So the kind of clients that we work best with and I work best with are people who are in the end open to input, you know, and you know, I personally don't pretend to have all the answers, never have had. But all I'm trying to do is somebody who works as a change worker, as a mentor, whatever you want to call it, is point people in the direct. Back to what I said right at the beginning of this conversation, it's like
right.
you're getting in your own way at some level. So let's look at what that is. And if we can work out how you're getting in your own way, whether it's structurally or systemically or in terms of your leadership behavior or whatever, then usually we can work out some fixes. And, you know, it's worked in, well, we have a 92% client retention rate across both businesses. So, you know, something about it's clearly working.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Phil, I could talk to you all day. You're so fascinating. But, you know, hopefully you might come back on the show sometime soon. And we can cover a load of other subjects. But I was basically going to say before we go, just a few moments, if you could just tell us kind of what you're up to now and how people can find you, and any final words of wisdom, and then we can all concentrate on panicking again.
Well, I'm on this absurd mission to go and give away everything I've ever thought about for free. So I write a Forbes column that goes out twice weekly. So if you go to Forbes.com and search for Phil Lewis, you'll find a column there under this insanely titled swim lane that they have. They call them swim lanes, which reads me okay. a section of the site called Leadership Strategy. So if somebody can explain to me what leadership strategy is, I'll give them a tenner. But that's the bucket within which we exist on Forbes. So you can go there. Corporatepunk.com also has a ton of articles on it. And a lot of information about how to actually go about driving positive change in businesses, both small and large. And then if you go to corporatepunk.com/bulletin, you can sign up there for a monthly newsletter. And again, on a monthly basis, we give away all our best thinking for free. So the idea here is continually just trying to provoke and inspire with stuff about how people work together and to what end. And just try and give that to people as openly as we possibly can, in the hope of at some level it helping. And then beyond that, sometimes you just need to be able to have a conversation with people and talk to them about how they can help you. And you know, our phone number's on the site, or if you write to me, it's phil.lewis@corporatepunk.com, and I'm very happy to have a conversation. We don't really sell what we do at all in that sense. We'll have a discussion about whether or not the kind of help you believe you need is the kind of help that we believe we can provide, and we check for values alignment, because if we're not aligned on values, which is to say if we don't care about the same things, then divorce is inevitable. It's just a matter of how much blood gets spilt on the carpet.
And on that note,
jolly note.
Well, listen, Phil, I'd love to thank you for your time. Thanks very much, and I wish you all the best, and I hope we get to chew the fat again soon, and hopefully we can catch up again when we're all a little bit less less stressed, and we can see what you're up to then. But thanks very much for your time, Phil. I do appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Keith. Take care.
Take care.
So that's a wrap on our first major industry interview. It's always great speaking to Phil because I love his takeaways. And if you're a PR, marketing, advertising, digital or social agency, you need to learn to value your knowledge. And especially in lean times, it's important to remember that creativity sits right up there with financial, analytical, strategic and HR prowess. So join us next week for more Quarantine Question Time when we pick on marketing luminaries trapped in their own homes and get them to spill the beans on what fuels their business development.